Welcome to Petite Marxist Clover, covering Ave Mojica. I am your co-host, Angles Next Door, and with me today is Eric Hopsmont, as always. Today, before we get into it, we kind of were talking beforehand, and we think we might there might be some triggery stuff today that we'll be talking about, more about mothers killing daughters. Or mothers wanting to.
I mean, we think there might be something triggerish, but I'm not sure what exactly at this moment. So
I agree.
We'll just record and we'll put a message in the beginning if something comes up.
Yeah. So once again, this was a very excellent episode. I now want to call this Ave Morticia.
Mortica.
Ave Mortica. Because this show is really just about her. And
she is really compelling.
She is really compelling. But boy howdy, does she not have anybody in her family that likes her. Maybe her dad, but her dad does not notice her at all, and he seems very absent as well. Unlike the mom.
Yeah, so that's worse.
Unlike the mom that legitimately feels like where she knows and doesn't care. Or cares.
Yeah, now I think we have an answer to how we were wondering.
Oh yeah.
Why?
Oh yeah.
Her parents weren't doing anything. And I kind of feel like they wanted Mortis Mutsumi to just die.
I agree. I enjoy that one of the first points where we see Saki and Mutsumi in the beginning of this episode, that we see that the room, it's clean now, it's nice, except the makeup station. Like the actual technical term for what that is, where like the mirror isn't
a dresser.
I think there's like a fun word for it.
Powder.
Yeah, we forget. Like that's still broken, and I feel like they have enough money to easily replace those mirrors. Like I don't think it would cost that much money.
Yeah, the mirror is broken.
The mirror is broken, and it just feels really weird that the mirror is still broken.
Cause it's a metaphor.
Metaphor for. The broken marriage, the broken family.
A metaphor that she doesn't have a self to look at.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's something there. Because, yeah, that's actually a pretty good reading of this. And that's where we kind of begin. We begin with our favorite description of depression in fiction, which is being in water and drowning, much like Mortis was in the beginning of this episode.
It was such a good... It's an intro... It's like underwater with this music playing that's just really interesting. And Mortis coming to realize that if things continue like this, she's gonna die. Like, the personality Mortis will be cast aside.
Mm-hmm. So she's worried. But, you know who's not worried? Mutsumi, because she got her sake back.
They're just chilling, they're doing... studying in Mutsumi's room together.
Yeah.
Sakiko skipping school for her. They're sipping tea and eating snacks. They're like, this is K-On now. We have a happy band show.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's just the music that plays during the scene. So, like, it's, like, happy and playful and just really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And they go for a walk. And again, yeah, just... playful tone of the music just carries on, and yeah, everything's just all flowers and happiness.
Mm-hmm. This is when they go to karaoke.
They go to karaoke, and what's in the karaoke song catalog?
I really cannot get over the fact that I do not get how, I know it's a fictional show, but the popularity of Ave Mojica blows my mind in universe that at the karaoke place, they had five number one, like the top five karaoke songs were Ave Mojica songs.
Including the opening.
Yeah, which would have been really funny if they started playing the opening. But no.
But no, because Mortis had to make an intervention.
Yeah, and be like, no, no.
So basically where we're at, Mutsumi just wants to be back at Krychek.
Yeah.
She wants to get the band back together and just have the idyllic... Those were the days of Krychek and just live happily forever in flowers and Sakiko.
Mm-hmm.
And Mortis, she wants Ave Mojica. She doesn't want happy Krychek. She wants weird goth burlesque metal rock.
I can't get over the fact that this girl that cannot play an instrument still desperately wants a band where she is an integral member of the band playing her instrument.
Aren't we all going through life looking for a band?
Or a podcast, you know, that's the new version of a band. Maybe she would be happy if she finds out there's like a goth, burlesque, erotic, lace mask, rock metal podcast.
Yeah, send us a manifesto if you want us to become that.
Yeah.
Mortis would actually be a really good podcaster. Like, she's just a natural stage presence.
Okay, no. I think she'd have to be an audio-only podcast.
Wow, you're saying she has a face for radio?
No, I'm saying that...
Wow, that's mean.
I'm saying that I don't know if her doing her arguments... Because, like, we learned that she's, like, the perfect actor. So I think she would do really well, but I don't think her perfect acting is actually very pleasant to watch.
Yeah, let's go to the backstory of the perfect actor.
Well, we haven't gone through that she has a fight with herself at the karaoke place.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so she has a fight with herself in front of Saki.
Yeah.
And that part was kind of fun.
Mortis takes over the body, tells Mutsumi, "You don't understand, shut up." And tell Sakiko, "Come on, Sakiko, get Mutsumi to shape up."
I don't know, at times I think Mortis is like just like free love. She is slightly painful with Sakiko. Like, I think she slightly likes Sakiko more than she lets on.
Hmm.
Or maybe Mortis is just a very fun vibe character. She just likes...
Yeah.
She just likes fun.
And she's also desperate. So she's desperate for allies because she's basically dying.
She is.
Like, the stakes are high now.
It's weird that Mortis is the personality that is dying, the one that feels more personable than, like, the weird introvert one that's in a band.
Yeah. Mortis is going mort.
She's going mort.
And Mutsumi is really mean in this.
Yeah, because Mutsumi is like...
She's basically like, go die.
Go die.
She's like, you were never in Krychik.
I want to be with my wifey.
In Krychik, not Abe Mujica.
Yeah.
You can't even play the guitar.
I also like that they're not talking to Krychik about if Krychik wants to come back together and reform while kicking out.
I think he's the tournament director, the tennis tournament right now.
Yes. I think pink haired girl or Ogawa and a heterochromia girl that is a ghost. I still want to believe she's not real. She is a figment of our imagination.
A cat ghost.
A cat ghost. Yes, she is a cat spirit meant to lead us to the alley of prosperity.
The alley cat.
The alley cat, yeah. Do you have anything else to say about the confrontation? Because the really meat of the matter of this episode is like the next two parts of this episode. Like, this part was fine.
Yeah, purple-haired girl.
Purple-haired girl.
The real one. not our purple-haired girl, but actually our purple-haired
Amaris,
girl.
Amaris. She kind of got pushed out of the show a little bit by the Mortis drama. So we see Purple Girl. She's at an agency, as all acting agencies in anime seem like, where you just run into random actors all the time. And she runs into Mutsumi's mom, who is in a doctor drama. We also found out Purple Haired Girl's job of getting an acting role in the last episode was set up by the mom. And also, we also realized during this conversation, the mom is kind of not a good person. Which, I'm not going to lie, is our greatest victory lap of all time. I'm so happy about this. As we stated earlier, I'm just very happy again that we called it.
Yeah, I mean, it's still sad to see a MILF go down.
But... I'm not as comfortable with calling characters that are slightly less old than us that. And we're not children that see mothers as that. I mean, there's mothers younger than us that they're also MILFs then.
But there's no mothers younger than us who have kids the age of Mortis Mutsumi, right?
No, you're wrong, actually. There are.
That seems kind of dark, though.
It's very dark. I've worked with kids that their parents are like that, around that age. Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. Yep. Sorry to bring you down, Eric.
Yeah, so she's not a great person. She noticed by Mutsumi's third birthday
Yeah.
that Mutsumi it's not just that she's the ideal actor. She cannot exist outside of acting. Like, everything is an act, and she can transform a personality. And the way Mortis explains it is there's like an infinite number of characters Mutsumi could take on from minute to minute. And then Mutsumi found a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Or more, Sakiko thrust it on her.
Yeah.
And Mutsumi fell in love with the guitar. And all that infinite characters that made her the perfect actor.
Yeah.
That she could just switch into seamlessly. They all died off.
Yeah.
To leave only Mutsumi, the guitarist, and Mortis, who just about survived the purge.
Yeah.
It's like that scene in Little Witch Academia, where Akko's inside of Suzu's consciousness.
Mm. I've read good fanfiction about this. Yeah.
All the different versions of Suzu,
mm-hmm,
are being executed inside her mind. It kind of reminded me of that.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting guillotined.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of concerning things from this, especially why was she like this? This is kind of weird. And I think like a lot of the show kind of feels like a response to trauma, because that's kind of how what kids that respond to trauma have to do, where you have to kind of, in a way, be reactive to the people around you at all times. Like, she's always mirroring. So there's like a fear that I have, and this is armchair psychiatrist, where I don't know if she ever felt safe in Mutsumi. And that's like the one part where I'm like, I don't know, this acting thing. I'm like, I don't know if she was after. I think she felt unsafe.
Yeah, the mom is arranging, like, is presenting this as Mutsumi's a psychopath.
Yeah.
That she has no real self, that she just copies the self that's required, which is, you know, I think there's a term when psychopaths do that.
Yeah.
But since this is Marxist Clover,
mm-hmm,
let's get post-structural on this.
Okay, go ahead.
Everything is acting. Like, none of us have a true self.
That's true.
We have, whatever we put out is like the text that exists. Like, there is no author inside that's actually the true us.
This is the plot of Billy Joel's eponymous song from The Stranger. The Stranger. We all have a face that we hide away forever, and we show it when everyone else is gone.
No, exactly. That's the opposite of this.
Really?
And that's, I think, why this critique is very useful.
Oh, okay. Keep going.
Because if you're saying you have a face you hide, that means you have a face that you hide from everyone.
Ooh.
While I think the post-structuralist reading is, there is no face that you hide.
Mm.
Whatever you put out is what's there, but there's nothing. There's no platonic ideal. There's no essence.
Mm. So, well, bear with me on this. I feel that the mom exacerbated this and made it so that she's like, oh yeah, like, if you keep changing who you are, it's like you're different people. And I feel like the mom may have done something to make it so Mutsumi doesn't really have like a foundation if she's able to switch. And of course, this is also just abstractions as well, what we're talking about.
Yeah, but I think it is just like the mom. Like, this idea that Mutsumi should have a real person, real self.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, it's very platonic, but it's not...
Maybe the mom is more like what I said with Billy Joel. Maybe the mom's like, she's a liar. She's constantly acting, but she's hiding who she is from us.
Well, no, I think the mom, uh-huh, thinks that everyone has a face that they're hiding. Mm-hmm. And Mutsumi doesn't have it. And she's like, what's wrong with this kid? She doesn't have the face that she hides. When really, do any of us actually have that true face inside?
I don't know. If we show, like, I think we already have a thumbnail for this episode. If you just make a picture of that image I sent you, where the mom just looks like a meanie looking at her small child. Looks like she wants her to die.
Yeah.
I think that's the mom's true face then.
Yeah, and like, I mean, I get it, like, there is that mirroring thing that happens with psychopaths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if this was the mom saying, I think she's a psychopath, it would kind of make sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think there also is that with trauma. I think if you trauma, like, you respond to it. I know, because I was recently listening to, like, a story about Oprah's upbringing. And, like, mm-hmm. Oprah was really, like, hearing about Oprah's experience, remind, like, how, as an entertainer, and especially if you've been around trauma, you kind of know how to read people and to expect what they're, how they're going to respond to things. So it's actually a really weird thing to do, as, like, it's actually really beneficial as an entertainer to know how to do that as well, is that you know how to get the right reactions and what to do when you get the wrong reactions of something.
Yeah, and we all kind of do mm-hmm. an extent of mm-hmm. that with emotional intelligence.
You're doing the post-structuralist. Keep going. I'm just fine with
it. Yeah, because I feel like we're kind of at risk of talking about two different things at the same time.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Because there's the angle of whether Mutsumi's a psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
And just mirroring people, or this argument about Mutsumi's wrong because she doesn't have an inner self, which is philosophically flawed, and it's like, no, everyone's like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, get off your high horse, mom.
Yeah.
She's just a normal person.
Okay, can we just tackle the latter one then? Because that's what you wanted to talk about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think this is inherently, and I think the way the show has handled this is inherently fascinating from, like, a really popcorny kind of funny thing. The way the mom reacted to this, like, is really weird. This is a really weird, like, actors are, like, we have a friend that is an actor, and he doesn't smell his own farts as much as the mom does. Like, this mom, she's, like, taking what you said about acting, like, to a utmost extreme. Like, saying that this small child is always acting.
She's like, I didn't even teach her this.
Yeah, and she seems, like, visibly upset.
She's giving her the death eyes.
She just does, like, wants her to die. And as we were alluding to earlier, like, the broken mirror, the lack of, like, total care for this child, it's unsurprising to me. And this yeah. is why, where I think, like, the trauma stuff, why I wanted to bring that in, it just feels like there's not a lot. There's some things that are not being said. That the mom also, I feel that the mom is not a very loving person as well, which I guess if you're not a loving person, can you truly recognize what your child is if you think they're always acting, if you don't trust them?
Do you think it's valid to resent your child's talent?
You know, we did actually ask our actor friend about this. He said, and I think this is true for everybody, is that I think slightly everybody does.
Yeah, because I mean, we all are bitter about talent and stuff like that.
You know what? I get jealous of people that, you know, with, like, the weird thing that you have to have the bottle remover or, like, the cap remover that can just do the thing where they, like, kind of, like, push it down on, like, a countertop to get the cap off of. I didn't learn how to do it, and that kind of blows my mind when people do that, because I'm like, what if you destroy your hand? Like, I always think, like, what if you actually, like, just break your hand doing that?
Ooh.
But no, I think there is like jealousy, but I think it's weird to be this jealous of your child, because, like, not like she resents her child, but, like, in a, like, a weird jealous way. At least that was my reading. Like, she's jealous that that her daughter is a better actor than her,
and that her daughter's going to be remembered more than she is.
Yeah, and that's also kind of, like, I hate saying this, this is actually largely a big criticism of this show, because this show repeatedly keeps coming back to the fact that Mutsumi, and this is maybe why I kept bringing up the trauma stuff, where Mutsumi, for some reason, is so highly respected as an actress, despite the fact that every time we've seen her act, it's been a cry for help in some shape or form.
Right.
And it's weird that everyone's like, God, she's so good at acting.
So, like the jealousy, it reminds me of Glass Mask.
Okay, explain.
But again, well, it's the natural talent.
Yeah.
Versus someone who doesn't have that natural talent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's super interesting in Glass Mask, because they're rivals of the same age. But yeah, what if your rival is your kid? Like, does Erling Haaland's dad...
Alfie Haaland?
Is a little part of him sad that he's not the most famous Haaland to play for Man City. And that now he's only known for Roy Keane attempting to murder him on the field and being the dad of Erling.
I think I wonder, too, what also probably... she resents the mom is that she can't live through her daughter, because she's actually really talented, and her daughter I don't think will pursue acting, but I don't think she knew that at the age of 3. So I wonder Because, you know, some parents do like to live their life through their kids. Back when we grew up, a big thing that really creeped me out was the pageant parents that brought their kids to pageants.
Yeah, that was awful. I hope that's died down now.
I think it's still around. The pageant stuff, like, always weirded me out, like, living you through your child. I'm an educator at my core, so I believe that you shouldn't push your beliefs. You should let your kids think for themselves. They should learn from you, of course.
So you're saying this is the point for Mutsumi's mom? At least she's not trying to live through Mutsumi. She's like, no, I want her to die, so my life isn't even affected.
I don't think she taught her how to be a human being. I think that's my biggest flaw, and where I think the trauma aspect of this also comes back in, where nobody is recognizing that this little girl, this three-year-old girl, is, for some reason, choosing to be this actress all the time, putting on airs to entertain, which is just
basically walking on eggshells.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, there's just a callousness to the way that at 3 years old, I realized she was a psychopath. And it's very funny that the image that I think that we'll probably hopefully share is that Mutsumi had like a little insect in her hand as well. And she looks like she's having fun with it and looks like the mom's like, how dare she have an insect in her hand? I mean, to be fair, I know in Japan, they like to collect insects. So
it's weird how Japan has convinced kids that watching Beatles fight is like peak entertainment.
Did I ever tell you the story that Tim Rogers of Action Button reviews, in one of his videos, he described that one of his Japanese friends thought that that was an American thing and that all Americans did that as well?
Oh.
And I'm like, no, I can't believe anybody thinks that. It's like, it's a choice. It gave us Pokemon, so I'm not fully against it.
Oh, okay. And I mean, if you live on an island full of
insects
in a really hot summer, yeah, you know, you need something to keep yourself occupied.
And not to be afraid to death of these giant beetles that
are like built like a tank.
Yeah, they look like a tank. I mean, that one with like the giant, yeah, like the kind of like a tank thing. Oh my god, like the rhinoceros beetle, I think that's what it's called. Oh my god. If I ever saw one of those live in the wild, I think I would faint. That would freak me out. But no, I think this acting aspect is so strange. And because like, she still resents her. Like, it's so fascinating, the resentment that still rolls off of the mom. Also, she resents the purple hair girl as well. Like, she literally kind of predicted that the purple hair girl would probably not be up for this job.
Yeah. Which feels like she's projecting how she feels about herself.
Yeah. And also, it feels like she's trying to sabotage the purple hair girl, because there's nothing worse than rejecting a favor of somebody that's in the industry.
No, I think she probably got the favor for purple haired girl, knowing purple haired girl is going to give it up. Just to illustrate that Mutsumi is so scary.
No, I think also that might hurt the purple haired girl in the future, because she rejected a favor of a senior.
But it wasn't really a favor. It was a trap.
It was a trap. But the person that she told to like give her an audition, that they don't know that. Like, the producer of this doesn't know that.
Yeah, but
see, this is my speculation.
I feel like that would reflect worse on the mom for recommending. I don't think.
Oh, okay.
I don't think purple haired girl suffers from this.
You're right. Yeah. Okay, fair. This mom sequence is weird.
It's really weird. We don't actually know, does she find Mutsumi a psychopath? Is she just insecure about Mutsumi's skill? Is she just projecting and she's like created Mutsumi to beat this by finding an excuse not to love her daughter?
Was she literally like excited when it's like, oh my god, she had an emotional breakdown at the concert. This is awesome.
I waited my whole life for this.
Yeah, in my whole life for this. I've been praying on her downfall since she was like 3 years old.
Some parents, they take pictures when their kids go to have the first concert. Mutsumi's mom is like framing the pictures of her first public emotional breakdown. Yeah, it's kind of hard to understand what the characters mean in this segment.
It's kind of hard to understand what the show is trying to tell with the Mutsumi character when the show is wrapped up in, because like Sakiko's whole problems is being slightly ignored for Mutsumi's problems, but Mutsumi's problems are so wacky and like out there as concepts. Because like you said, you go from where I was talking about trauma, and then you talk about like acting, and it's just like, it's so strange to put so much of this show. I mean, I love it. It's great, but it's just so weird. It is such a weird character.
Mm.
And we still have to talk about the fact that she shows up a little bit later, but we have to talk about No Jacket Required if you're ready to move on.
You have to talk about No Jacket Required. It's Phil Collins time, people.
Yeah, yeah. So No Jacket Required, she shows up, she's at school with her lover, Jacket Required.
Her bang dream partner that she's bang dreaming?
Oh, she does have more bangs as well. She does have longer bangs, I think, Jacket Required.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Jacket Required straight up tells No Jacket Required, you're not trustworthy. Which sounded like a breakup of the friendship. Like, it's not.
It's not.
But it was like the thing of where you think of the meanest thing to say to someone.
Oh, you're right. Like, I did not take it as that serious because we just got over the mom and I was still kind of talking about that. But that is a harsh thing to say to anybody. Like, if you said that to me, I would be really upset with you. Be like, what do
you...
Yeah,
like, to say that to your best friend and...
Oh, like over at the vending machine too.
Vending machine, because all good conversations in anime happen at a vending machine.
And I'm like, this destroys the sanctity of the vending machine.
It's true, and No Jacket Required doesn't have any other friends.
She doesn't, because she's untrustworthy.
Exactly, and then we get to see her normal lifestyle.
Yeah.
So we see her writing music.
Yeah.
So she's at work, diligently composing.
Yeah.
And then she has an alarm set for exactly noon.
Oh, I didn't notice that. Okay.
Yeah. So she has a meticulous schedule.
Yeah.
And once the alarm hits noon, she eats.
Uh-huh.
And by eats, she drinks a protein shake?
That's right.
Or one of those Soylent kind of stuff?
That's what you meant by in our pre-podcast discussion while you wanted to talk about it. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and I tried to go through the Google Translate, Google Lens of the shot of what she's drinking.
Uh-huh.
And it's some sort of beauty, nutrition for beauty formula, I guess. So she is like min-maxing being a rock star.
Yeah.
Like she's min-maxing her music work. She's min-maxing trying to keep her looks up.
She's not doing enough drugs. So she is the most rock and roll looking of all of them. Surprised she's not doing drugs to get her meticulous schedule.
Oh yeah, because it reminded me of Soylent, you know, which was that powder thing you mix in water, and it was supposed to be a full meal, and it was kind of created by these Silicon Valley types who are like, we are too busy doing programming, doing important stuff to eat, so we're going to be efficient and just drink a shake. That's all our meals for us, so we can spend more time programming, which is, you know, the highest form of humanity.
Can we, like, spoil an old B-movie as well, and why this was, like, also a really bad name?
I mean, the B-movie is not that old.
Is Soylent Green?
Oh, no, I was making a joke about the B-movie.
Oh. You should keep this in. This was, like, every time we say B, you should speed up the podcast a little bit. That's a great new video.
It is a great meme.
So no, like Soylent Green is all about like the big twist is that what they're eating is humans. So I always thought that the Soylent name was like a really bad name because it's like it's so close to Soylent Green, where like the twist in Soylent Green and like the Silicon Valley types, they're really nerdy, so they probably also know about Soylent Green.
Yeah. And they're probably making some sort of libertarian statement of we don't care whether it's human meat.
Yeah. Good core memory of releasing something that I think we literally talked about and made fun of a long time ago as well.
And then we see, I guess, some of her motivation for being like this.
Yeah.
Which her mom calls her.
Yeah.
And you pointed out she's, I mean...
You don't have to bring this up.
She's chubby.
Yes.
Well, yeah, but like... I did originally assume it was, like, a filter.
Yeah.
But it makes sense from what you're saying, if you actually believe that image, that her mom's chubby, and No Jacket Required is, like, overcompensating by being, like, I'm not going to ever eat food.
it's a bold strategy, especially because she's also a teenager. That is the one thing I keep thinking about this show, is that these are still teenagers that are in school, and I cannot get over the fact that they are teenagers in school still. Like, at least in a show that we don't like, Daima, Oshinoko, they went to, like, a special school, where it doesn't feel like you ever have to go to that school. It's just that all the actors go. This one, it just feels like they're going to normal schools, and they have to do normal school things.
Like, maybe no jacket required, and jacket required, blonde-haired girl school.
Yeah.
That sounds like a fancier school.
Yeah.
But Sakiko's school seems like a, you know, Sakiko's hanging out with the proletariat.
Yeah. Yeah. She wants to live among common people.
I want to be like you're common people.
So also that leads to our fact that the mom doesn't care, like, because, like, also that's where Mutsumi goes. So she's like, oh yeah, go. We're gonna send our child, who is a child of two very famous people. Yeah, let's send her to a public school.
There is a security risk, I feel like.
I mean, my public school love comes through, and I'm like, oh, no, that's the real ones for doing that.
That's base.
That's base.
You're like, no, I'm on Team Mutsumi's mom now. You don't need to love your child.
You just need to send it to public school.
As long as you bring them to public school and, like, not perpetuate the inequalities of our education systems.
Because you want her to live among common people.
Yeah. But she's, unlike the song, she's not going to fuck common people like you, because she's going to be with Sakiko.
Well, right, Sakiko is in a weird gray zone where...
She actually did live the common people life.
She did.
Like, except for the line in Common People, the song,
yeah,
which is, you will never live like common people, and then it gets to the line of, because when you watch the roaches crawling down the wall, mm-hmm, you could call your dad and stop it all.
Roaches climb the wall. If you called your dad, he could stop it all. Yeah. You'll never live like common people.
Oh, in Sakiko's case, your grandpa can just show up. And
Yeah. I was about to bring that up. I'm like, that's exactly kind of what happens, though. Like,
she did always have that card. Like, she didn't want to play that card.
You could go stay at Mutsumi's place, or you could go stay at Blonde Girl Place. She does show up for a hot minute. A character that I still think is...
Minute is overstating things.
One of the weirdest things about the show is that the singer of the group, who I feel, because this is a group before, people want to know about the singer of the group. You know, in 22...
Even in the opening, like, she is front and center. And, yeah, she's gone. She's disappeared.
Like, in 22-7, also, the main singer is boring on the surface. She's a boring girl. I mean, she is violent. She is the...
Did she even sing? I just remember her playing the piano.
I think she's a singer of a...
I guess they all sang.
She's the center. I think she's the center.
Yeah. Her best performance was when she played the piano, though.
I don't think she's tall enough, because I think if you're a center, you have to be pretty tall. So I don't know why they chose her to be a center.
Really?
Yeah.
But wouldn't that help you be in the front? Because you're not going to block everybody behind you?
I don't know. I don't have a lot of ball knowledge. I apologize to our basketball Ave Mujica Bang Dream fans.
Oh, you're making center. Like, yes. Oh, that's true. Like, she's in the paint?
Sorry.
I think Mortis would be a monster in the paint.
I don't think so at all, because she is really... Like, we see her later on this episode, she could barely carry guitar around town.
Oh, okay, good point. She has no stamina.
Yeah.
Sakiko lived a clannad basketball life.
She did. that's a funny cut.
So far, we've been introduced that No Jacket Required is like a control freak.
Yeah.
And I guess it's the existential crisis of her friend just telling her that you suck.
Yeah.
She just kind of turns it off for a night and just, like, goes, I'm just going to remove all inhibitions.
Mm-hmm.
She still doesn't do drugs. So, you know, she's not very eccentric.
She does something better than drugs. She just buys a bunch of clothes that we'll never see her wear, because she only wears a jacket.
That's true. And, I mean, I guess shopping can be a drug.
Like, it can be.
Probably affects your brain some similar ways. I don't know.
It's fun, as I always brought up.
Retail therapy is... It's dangerous, but it's very easy to do, and I also do enjoy it.
It's very bougie, and it depresses me that it is a bougie advantage that
poor people don't have access to.
Yeah, and we're not as bougie as No Jacket Required, because she, like, buys the whole mall.
Except for, like, her football manager fit of purple-haired girl. That totally reminded me of something dumb I'd wear. FM60.
She did buy it, though.
She did?
No Jacket Required girl bought purple-haired girl's line that purple-haired girl is modeling now as a brand ambassador.
Wow.
She's not going to wear it. But hey, at least she's supporting her friend financially.
Yeah.
Well, then she makes a friend, makes purple-haired girl pay for her cafe bill later on, so I guess money comes back.
Yeah, that totally is as expensive as the cafe bill is.
Well, like, the amount, the percentage of that one dress that the purple-haired girl gets is probably less than the cafe bill.
But no, her carrying all these things, I just want to know how long she contorted her arms to carry these.
Yeah, so she is, like, resting all these shopping bags on, like, using her arms as, like, coat hangers.
Yeah.
And she has to, like, as you said, like, bend her arms upwards into, like, a, well, an eagle pose, as the memes have been pointing
out. That's really good.
Yeah, and she just has these bags hanging down from her, like, fitters. Which, okay, pretentious alert. This is going to be very pretentious, and, but hey, death of the author, this is what I see. It's a metaphor. She's freeing herself from her controlling ways. She's breaking free, like, she's had this meticulous routine, and this is her being like, I'm going to not care for a night. And these shopping bags are the evidence of her flying away free from her normal reticence.
Yeah, we are very different people. Me and Jacket Require, this would literally break my brain if I broke from my routine to go shop in a store. This would just annoy me to no end.
Yeah, because you're trustworthy.
Thank you. You're trustworthy, too. Also, she does also believe that Jacket Required is trustworthy because she just drops off her guitar at Jacket Required's workplace.
You know, when you, even when you're in a fight with your lover, you still trust him with your bass.
So she confronts the purple-haired girl at a cafe. Actually, no, she goes to the agency, and then they go to the cafe.
She goes to purple-haired girl's agency, and she says, yeah, I got dumped by Mutsumi and Sakiko when I tried to reform Ave Mujica, and I'm just sad, so I bought all this stuff.
There's also, like, a setup where it's like, oh, she had a message for you, and she's outside. I think that's also... It's at a cafe, and then that's where we learn purple hair is like, this is what Jacket Required meant. And you explain it.
Yeah, so I think what they're saying is No Jacket Required loves being in control, but, like, she doesn't take leadership. So, like, say with Ave Mujica, Sakiko took all the leadership decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Even though No Jacket Required, like, ran the logistics and was, like, the person doing the motions of being in control.
Mm-hmm.
And that is very annoying to other people.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, you're being bossy, but you're not actually, like, providing that leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and I think that's the main trauma of No Jacket Required's life, is trying not to annoy everyone around her.
And she still wants to bring back Ave Mujica. Well,
more than anyone. She's the one who probably cared the least about Ave Mujica while the band was running.
As we said in the last episode, though, she is the only one that looks happy in the pictures on the official website.
Yeah. Really?
Yes. We also get a sequence of where we see she had a previous band. And this was really funny, where they were going to go perform. But they, instead of, like saying the band's disbanded, they just let her show up. I also think it's very funny that she actually went on stage without her band.
Well, I think she was, like, hoping her band would show up at the last moment. And she's like, oh, maybe for stall, you know? But no, her band was, like, tired of her shit. And they were like, yeah, let's just leave her alone on the stage,
mm-hmm,
crying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I mean, middle schoolers can be savage.
They can be very, very, very savage.
And then, so we get the final part of the episode. No Jacket Required invites Mortis along.
Mm-hmm.
And besides showing that Mortis has no physical stamina, No Jacket Required is going to teach Mortis the guitar.
It seems that way.
And she whispers into Mortis's ear, "You can become real."
By learning to play the guitar. And
by learning to play the guitar.
Does that mean Mutsumi is dead and we only have Mortis?
Well, I think it means that now they'll be fighting on equal ground.
Yeah, it's all about the guitar.
And this is where No Jacket Required says the final line,
mm-hmm.
where she's like, "No matter how much you beautify, a doll will always just be a doll."
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the idea here is she's trying to beautify Mortis to make Mortis real. She's trying to beautify herself.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll never be real. They're all dolls.
Yeah.
And if we go back to the post-structuralist lens, it's saying that, like, we are all dolls. What we do is what's real. So, like, maybe that's why Mortis needs to learn the guitar, because that's something she's actually doing. So that makes her real. While if she's not leaving anything in the real world, then she's not real?
Maybe.
Like, maybe we are all just dolls beautifying ourselves.
Yeah, there's a good argument for that. Yeah.
And there is nothing inside. I'm starting to realize that this is making me sound like I'm saying there is no souls, which, okay, yeah, I don't believe in souls, mm-hmm. but I don't think that post-structuralist angle is... Actually, maybe it is at odds with the concept of souls.
Maybe.
I mean, souls is a very Platonic idea, isn't it? I don't know why I went down that soul thing. I just started talking about the post-structuralist idea of self.
Yeah.
And realized that this is very anti-soul, and I was like, I don't want to come really hard at people who care about souls, but at the same time, I guess I am.
Yeah, I think the self, the soul, because this show is kind of about figuring out who you are. Are we dolls? Are we performers? Are we people? Are we bourgeois? Are we the proletariat?
Are we the common people?
Are we common people? Are we cat ghosts becoming human? I mean, I still really like this heterochromia theory. Are we corporations in the United States? They're considered people, so...
Oh, yeah, so, that's true, so, that's so true. They, so, Togawa...
Group!
Togawa Group!
Is a person.
Is a person in the United States. I don't know how it's like...
So maybe souls exist, but only one soul, and that's the soul of heterochromia.
It might be. Or the soul of a cat, and Mutsumi needs to find her cat self. And that will be the true Mutsumi.
Wait, isn't the purple-haired girl, like, cat-coded? Because her name's Niamu?
Yeah, and she does a lot of cat poses throughout this show.
So are you saying that's the one true ship?
Is Mutsumi and the purple-haired girl? That
the one relationship that's had no sexual tension at all this whole show?
But, like... I think that would be a good confrontation. Where, like, you kind of ruined my whole vibe. Like, you ruined the erotic burlesque goth rock metal play avant-garde band. Okay, they're not very avant-garde. I apologize to avant-garde music fans. I guess the whole performance is kind of avant-garde. It's a little weird. It's okay. It's very performative. You ruined that. You made me just, I'm my mother's daughter, which I hate my mom because she tried to kill me as a child. I'm joking. We don't know that. But I wouldn't be surprised.
You wouldn't be surprised if, like, the kettle just happened to be a little too close to the corner sometimes.
Yeah.
To the edge.
Yeah. And yeah, it looks like the next episode preview, so, like, looking at some of that stuff, if I'm alright to talk about that.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like we see Mortis in Ave Mujica outfit. It is strange that the show is very, very not much about the misadventures of Ave Mujica. I kind of want a prequel series about how Ave Mujica was formed and how they got a fandom. That is really what I want from this show more than anything else. Because I still do not believe they're real. I know they're not real in, like, a real sense. I mean, I guess they actually are a band. Well, but, like, they're not...
I mean, Ave Mujica.
Are we real? That's what this show makes you ask. Is like, are we real? Who is real? What is fandom?
Yeah, like, because there's a certain amount of suspension of disbelief needed to even consume any Ave Mujica performance.
Yeah.
And, like, if there's a whole group of people who are in the suspension of disbelief,
mm-hmm.
it makes sense. Like, you can see getting into it. But who's going to be the first person to be like, yeah, this is not insane and deranged. This is cool.
Yeah, guys, I just saw this band called Ave Mojica. It changed my life. They played normal rock music, but like, it was fine. It was really good. I liked it, you know? Rock music is rock music. It doesn't matter. We always like rock music. But like, they did this weird play stuff, and it was kind of fascinating and changed my life. Like, like they talked about being dolls. It looked like they were going to kill each other. I don't know why I was here for the music, because I feel like you're only here for the weird doll stuff and the weird choreography that... It's just really dramatic sitting and staring and sometimes walking.
And was anyone keeping track of the storyline in the first two concerts?
Because we also want to do episodes on Eerie Is My Job. Not really talking about how Eerie Is My Job is one of the most insane ideas for anything. For those who know, you know. But like, that also had involved deep lore that you had to keep up with on a daily basis. Like, every day was a performance. So, I think so. Actually, what if there's not?
What do you mean?
What if, like, there is no record of that first performance?
It's lost media?
It's lost media.
Ooh.
And, like, I feel that Sakiko is hardcore enough to never actually restate the story. So, do you have anything else to add before we head out?
No.
And walk off into the distance for our audio listeners? We always just walk away after these podcasts are over. So since they're and learn the guitar so we can learn to become our true selves.
Because we're not real.
We're not real.
We are just voices that exist in this audio. But that's not like a real person. Like, that's just a person.
And we're going to reveal something to you that I don't know if Aaron will like that I reveal this. Those aren't actually our names. We've been lying to you this whole time.
The mask is off.
The mask is off. Our erotic rock metal performance arts goth podcast is coming to an end. This is your co-host, Angles Next Door. And this is my co-host,
Evie Cobbs Bond.
And thank you so much and have a great day. Right into Marx's Clover about your Ave Mojica. Because it's probably coming out when Ave Mojica is done. So you can make fun of anything we've missed at this point. So have a good night. Bye bye.
Bye-bye.
Ohayou gozaimasu. Oro, oro. Arere?
Oro, oro. Oi, Kudo.